Hi, this is Megan.
And this is Holly.
And this is Yoga in the Dark,
a place where we discuss a variety of esoteric and scientific topics, because sometimes the only way to the light is through the dark.
Today's episode explores energy and power. How are you doing today, Holly?
It's been a fucking hell of a week. Did you see my eyes get all big for me? Yeah. I was like, oh my God, yeah. She's going to ask me how I'm doing. She's going to ask me how I'm doing. I don't want to tell you. No, I'm okay. I think I fucking say that every week on the podcast. I think I need to change it. I'm okay. No, this week has been incredibly challenging. There's been some ups and downs. And I think as we work through, as a society, we work through all this shit with COVID. And it's been an interesting time. A separation between me and my spa job has occurred. Megan and I both worked there. And it's interesting. I'm kind of a little bit scared about what to do next, but I think I have some things in place and I'm looking forward to the future, at least enough in the sense that I have wanted to really get out there on my own eventually. So,
yeah, you're a badass queen. I think it's time.
Thank you.
Everyone, come book massages with Holly so she can be self-employed.
Come see me.
I mean, when quarantine is over and stuff.
Yeah, when all that shit's over. Well, and I'm immunocompromised, right? So I have been using a lot of steroids. And it's so funny when I hear our, like, funny, like, little language slip-ups. I'm all steba.
Steda.
No, so definitely I'm taking a bunch of steroids. So that makes it kind of so that I need to kind of relax before going out into a bunch of public places.
Yeah.
And I have a bit of cabin fever. I have a good thing. I just finished my semester. Woohoo! One good thing.
Congratulations.
Just kidding. There's a lot of good things in this world. I have been doing a gratitude list. Thank you. It was challenging, but I'm really glad that I took that class because I actually brought to my topic today, I had to write this big old paper, so I figured I would just kill two birds with one stone and present some of the research and some of the aspects of my topic today, because I don't want to say what I'm talking about yet.
Yeah, don't give it away. Make them wait.
You have to wait for it.
You have to be patient.
No, don't fast forward past Megan. That's not cool.
I'm the hippie one. I'm entertaining.
You are.
You can,
it's great.
You can learn about hippie things or maybe just laugh at me.
True. Okay, before we begin, though, I do want to tell you one more thing. And then I'm going to ask you how you are.
Oh, okay. I like how you're letting me know. Like, don't worry. I care about you. I'm going to ask you how you're feeling.
No Megan left behind.
I'm a good friend.
Right. Okay, so I have to tell you. So I went on a spiritual journey sometime last week. Because what fucking day is it? Is this Saturday? No, it's Friday. It's Friday. And so it was either earlier this week. No, it was earlier this week. What's so funny?
Oh, I just was thinking I had to go to physical therapy this morning, and they give me like a face mask when I walk in, and they take my temperature. Like, they're being really hardcore about it, and then they like, which is good. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Right.
And then she makes me fill out this like whole consent form and stuff.
What are you consenting to?
I didn't read it. I know that's bad.
Relations?
I just hit accept on the iPhone updates. I don't ever read them. But probably saying if I catch COVID, I can't sue them for giving it to me or something like that.
Yeah, no suing.
But I was filling it out, and then I was like, what is the date? And she was like, it's the 8th. And I was like, what is the month?
legitimately we talked about that last week. We were like, what fucking month is it? No, it's so true. Well, I did go on a spiritual journey earlier this week, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was cracking River up because I was saying something about how my throat felt really dry, and it did. And I just bought a new humidifier that I have been cranking at night because when you take an inhalable steroid, you tend to feel like you end up getting a bunch of dry mouth. And so I totally had some dry mouth and was just like, what the fuck? I bought this humidifier. But so I'm kind of like rambling on. And then all of a sudden in my mind.
You sure it was the steroids that give you dry mouth, Holly?
Oh. I No comment.
No comment. Go on.
I'm like, you put me on the spot. Oh, sorry. Just kidding. No, so I woke up and I'm thinking about how my humidifier doesn't feel like it's working. And then I was like, maybe it's my air filter. I have this great air purifier.
We talked about it
last week. Yeah, they haven't sponsored us yet. So
whatever. Come on, guys.
Yeah, they're dropping the ball on that one. But I think, what'd you say, call it Lavoit?
Yeah, I was trying to look at it.
I know, I saw you. Well, so I was like, maybe my air purifier is too efficient. Like, it's pulling the moisture out of the air and then just pumping more purified air out. And then I had this, like, conjured up. It's way more funny in my head now, and I don't know if we'll keep this in the episode, but whatever. But I basically conjured up in my head that the humidifier and the air purifier were in a turf war with each other. And I was like, the humidifier keeps humidifying, and the air purifier keeps purifying, and they're in a turf war. It's like West Side Story.
Battle to the death. Stupid. Who will win?
Well, I ended up turning down my air purifier, so I think it did help because my room has felt a lot more humid lately.
Yeah.
And I'm not clearing my throat as often, which is great for editing. Mm-hmm. Because the amount of times I cleared my throat in episode 5 that I cut out was
at least 108.
Probably.
At least it was like the holy yoga number,
the holy number of throat clearings. I don't fucking know.
There's your episode title.
Wait, what? What did I say?
The holy number of throat clearings. Speaking of which.
It was a great time. Okay. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've had a bit of a up and down week myself, but driving over here, I got stuck in rush hour traffic.
There was rush hour?
Which was like a very strange phenomenon to me. Like, I was very unfamiliar with that. I actually found myself being very surprised when I was getting on the freeway, and I was like, what? And I kind of remembered, right? Life used to be like this. There was always traffic. And traffic in Denver has gotten pretty bad
over the last few years.
But I just got used to there not being any traffic because of the quarantine. And I feel like people are really jumping back out into the world right now. And I know this is going to release later, so this is really outdated by the time people are listening to it.
A couple weeks, but maybe.
I was a little shocked. I was like, wow, people are just out doing stuff again. And I've heard from a lot of people, they're going back to work next week, and it feels very fast to me.
It does feel very fast to me, too. I actually have to wonder, and it'll be kind of interesting when we release this, because we just released episode 5. No.
Right.
Yes. Episode 5, titled, If Byron and Wim Had a Baby, It Would Have the Voice of the Tomb in Aladdin. You'll have to listen to it and find out why. It's freaking hilarious. But we are recording now episode 7, and then after that's the listener's episode. So that will these will release in a couple of weeks, and it'll just be interesting to kind of look back in a couple of weeks and go, did we just return to normal and kind of not learn anything about this experience, or what shifted?
Yeah.
You know, can we look at that and see what shifted for us? Because for me, I feel like a lot of things have lifted and shifted, and you know, I've worked at that spa for 15 years, and what I will say is not once in 15 years did I ever receive a raise as a massage therapist. I have trained people there, and I've done a lot of things there, and I obviously
trained me there a lot of things.
Right?
Yeah.
I've trained a lot of people there, and, you know, and I've actually been considering it, and I talked to one of my coworker friends from the spa, and I was like, do you want to start a union with me? Because I really was thinking that. During this whole time, a lot of small businesses and employees are really struggling to kind of make ends meet and figure this stuff out. And one thing that remains to be really true in massage is that we don't have a union. And it's no wonder we have places like Massage MB kind of running all around, you know, because they pay people like $13 an hour. And then there's no standardized kind of entry-level pay. And then pretty much just any business or any place can just kind of determine what your worthiness is. And then they take, what, 65% of your income? Like, it's just insane.
It is a big pill to swallow.
Yeah, which is why after this quarantine is over and my health improves, I've decided to go out completely on my own and just let the spa let me go because I don't have time for a company that doesn't take care of their employees that have put absolutely in a lot of time and effort,
I feel like
right?
I wanted to clap just now, but then I was like, oh, I can't make noise on the podcast when I was, when I was listening to the last one, I was like, oh man, when I got really heated, I'd do this thing where I'd like put my finger down on the table.
Yeah, you pound.
When I was making a point. And you had to yell at me halfway through. You were like, stop pounding the table. And then I was listening to the last one, and there was a couple where you didn't, you couldn't cut it out. And it was so funny. I was hearing it, and I was like, man, you can tell when I'm really heated because I start hitting things.
Me too. Me fucking too, girl. Yeah, so it sounds like we all kind of have had similar experiences. And I think that this week in particular was incredibly challenging. I've heard it from so many people. Like, you had a challenging week. I had a challenging week. The full moon was this week. And then just people are really settling in. People are getting used to going back to work. And for some of us who have to really consider who we live with, what our health is like, and who this might impact if we go back full force,
exactly,
it'll be interesting to see what happens in the weeks to come.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry you had a rough week, but you seem like you're feeling better.
I'm feeling much better.
Yeah, good.
I like being in the company of you. And I love drinking cacao.
Yeah, we're drinking cacao.
Cacao is very, this isn't cacao. My topic. Cacao! Yeah, there's
my
a Portlandia.
Nice implant. Okay, mama. What you bringing to the table today?
I am going to talk about Reiki.
Reiki, you look like you have Reiki. The emails up. Wait, no, that's your email. It's titled, you guys, I want you to know Megan asked me to print out her notes, and the subject line in this particular email was, don't read it, bitch.
I always think she's going to read it and then not be surprised when I'm talking about it. And I love the word bitch, you guys. And I'm going to get into that one day. I'm going to explain to you why. I just hope that no one is offended by me saying bitch all the time, because I love that word, and I promise that I'm a feminist, and like, I'll explain to you how I feel about that word one day.
Do you remember?
Not today.
Okay. Do you remember a couple years ago, your New Year's resolution was to not use the word bitch anymore?
Yes.
You were so funny. You were like, I feel like I'm saying it more now.
Yes.
I can't stop.
So what happened is when I started becoming, like, I've always been a feminist in my heart, but when I started becoming a hardcore feminist intentionally, I decided I was going to stop calling women girls.
Right.
Because I'm notorious for, like, calling people girl, like, yeah, girl, or hey, girl. And I just decided to empower women and call them women. And I do a lot of times say,
I do that.
Yeah, and I actually say now, like, you go, woman, or
I'm going to start
saying woman.
That. Hey, woman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my New Year's resolution was to stop saying girl, was to start saying woman instead, and was to stop saying words that harm women and that cater to the patriarchy, words like slut and bitch and, you know, like the C word. And stuff like that.
Don't say it.
And so what happened, like Holly said, was I was trying so hard not to say that word, but then I'm also a rebel by nature.
Right.
So me the too. Second that I was told I wasn't supposed to say it, even if I was telling myself that I wasn't supposed to say it.
You want
to
break your
my God.
Own rules.
Yes. I wanted to rebel against myself, which is the most ridiculous, stupid thing. But so I started saying it all the time. Then I was like, no, I can't stop saying it. I just can't stop. And then I decided to just kind of take the word back. I was like, you know what? Like, it was kind of like when Trump was talking about grabbing women by the pussy. And then I hated that word for a long time. And then a bunch of women were like, you know what? We're going to take that word back. That's our fucking word.
That's
you cannot ruin
word.
It for yeah. us. So yeah. Kind of the way I felt about the word bitch. I was like, you know what? What if I use it as a term of empowerment of like, no, like I'm a badass bitch
you
and you're a badass bitch and I'm going to call you a bitch and we're going to take that word back. That's our fucking word now. And then when other people use it to hurt us, it can't hurt us because it's our word now.
Yeah. You know what that makes me think of is two things. One is in the movie, and this is not relatable, obviously, for me because I am not African American, black.
They're gonna say I'm not a bitch.
I know. No,
like, well, sometimes.
I kind of am.
I'm just kidding.
Depends on the day and the time of the month.
Whoa, whoa.
No, like in the movie Lean on Me, where he's like, I'm the HNIC. And they're like, what does that mean? And they like tell him what it means. But I say HBIC, which means head bitch in charge.
Yeah.
So it's everything that you're saying actually really fits into my topic. So I appreciate you.
See, we're just always on the same page.
Yeah, well, we didn't really synchronize our topics this time, which is totally fine. Actually, I'm glad we didn't, because just naturally what we talk about tends to end up addressing.
Yeah.
What we bring into the table. So
I said I wasn't going to explain that, and then I did.
Yep.
So.
Pretty much.
There you go.
Well, here we go.
You're welcome.
So, wait.
Anyway.
What are we talking about? The subject. I don't think the subject, your topic is don't read it, bitch. So what's the topic?
So, yes. My topic is not the word bitch. My topic is Reiki. So for those of you who don't know what Reiki is or who are new to Reiki, it's a ancient form of energy work that originated in Japan, and it's used worldwide. So the first part of the word, if we break it down, Rei means divine, spirit, mystery, gift, or nature spirit. And then Ki, or sometimes you might hear it referred to as Chi, is energy, feeling, or nature seen. So Reiki together generally means universal life energy or white light energy. One way that I like to describe Reiki to my students is this comic that I found one time. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to find it since, so I'm just going to describe it to you. But
please do.
It's two fish, and they're like floating in the ocean together.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this comic, the ocean is Reiki.
Okay.
And so one fish says to the other fish, what is this ocean they speak of? And so what the comic means basically is that Reiki is all around us and inside right. of us all the time.
Yeah.
It's just something that we can choose to tap into and to see and learn and recognize and use and move. And it's basically like when I was talking about Santosh, it's basically, so like when I was talking about Santosh, it's choosing to see the positive, like it's choosing to see the happy. And so with Reiki, sure. it's choosing to see the magic, because the magic is real and it's all around us all of the time. So to explain further Reiki, I need to first kind of get into the collective consciousness. So according to ThoughtCo.com, collective consciousness, sometimes called collective conscious, is a fundamental sociological concept that refers to the set of shared beliefs, ideas, attitudes, and knowledge that are common to a social group or society. The collective consciousness informs our sense of belonging and identity and our behavior. Founding sociologist Emily Durkheim developed this concept to explain how unique individuals are bound together into collective units like social groups and societies. So collective consciousness is a phenomena in which we create reality with our thoughts and beliefs. When enough people believe in something, it becomes real. That's why practicing the power of intention, like I talked about in the last episode, is so important.
You read my mind. I was just thinking that. I was like, you were just talking about this. See? And you bring this in even, so Megan has been offering a Reiki World Peace Meditation every Sunday through our other group called the Denver Collective. Mm-hmm. Y'all should check it out every Sunday. And I think that's kind of what you're addressing. And you've said it, like when we meditate or we meditate together with the intention on meditation on the world peace, or the peace in the world, mm-hmm. that we inherently affect the whole.
Yeah, with the collective consciousness works with meditation, it's been proven that when large groups of people meditate, in that area, crime rates will go down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and people report feeling more joyous and happy. And then I didn't have time to look up the exact text, but what Dr. Wayne Dyer talks about this. Is it Dr. Wayne Dyer or is it Eckhart Tolle?
Shoot, and I'll try. Tell me more.
Okay, so they talk about how there's different like levels of consciousness and enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And so if you're someone that meditates regularly and the majority of your life is put to the greater good, you're like a certain level. And so the higher the level, like of high vibrations that you give off into the world, it counteracts a certain amount of negative vibrations.
Sure.
And the higher vibrations are way more potent than the negative ones. And I wish I had like numbers in front of me, but I just don't. But it was something like someone that has the vibration and consciousness level of like Jesus Christ or of the Buddha, they can knock out, it was something like 250,000 negative people, like their vibration. Yeah.
And I want to know where this formula is. Show me the money.
I'll find it one day.
We'll talk about it in episode 25. It'll be fine.
So we just live in our own realities. Each one of us has created this reality for ourselves, and we are choosing our reality every day that we wake up, and we can choose to change it, or we can choose to just live in it. So the reason that the power of intention is so important for you to wake up every day and to choose how you're going to create your life that day is because if we don't create our own reality, then we're just living in someone else's.
Right.
So the way that collective consciousness works is the more people that believe in something, the easier it is for it to manifest into a reality or into like a solid form, into a solid thing. Ooh. And so there's all these realities around us, right? For example, this house and the fact that this room is my reality. Here. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm in it because
it really is. I have my own little universe here.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Thank you for coming into my universe.
You're welcome. But also it's examples like religion, you know, like the Catholic or the Catholic.
I love our speech impediments. Yes.
The Catholic and the Christian religion, because they are just such a widely accepted form of reality where we live, like in this country.
Sure.
That's what makes it so real.
God damn it. Everything you're saying still applies to what I'm presenting.
Cool. This is very
Why
cool.
are you like this?
I just am.
I am because I am that I am.
So, Hariyam Tatsat.
Hariyam Tatsat.
So this is from foreverconscious.com, which is one of my favorite websites in the whole world. And you should definitely check out.
I think you've referenced it before.
I probably will again.
Probably.
We are all part of the collective consciousness. This means that together, we are all responsible for the creation of life on Earth. If we are to all understand this on the deepest of levels, seeking higher consciousness would be the most important journey in life. And she talks about how like money and power and all those things are no longer important. Taking care of each other is what is important when we're focused on our consciousness, and then everything else just falls into place.
Hmm.
And from naturalawakenings.com, in 2000, Malcolm Gladwell, author of The Tipping Point, How Little Things Can Make a Big Difference, provided a ray of hope for the estimated 50 million individuals involved in the World Enlightenment movement by introducing the concept of critical mass. This occurs when an unshakable belief is held by 10% of the population. Scientists that tested the phenomenon discovered, once that number grows above 10%, the idea spreads like flame. Mahesh predicted that only 1% of humanity is needed to create enough good vibrations to usher in world peace. While the figures required to reach this critical mass can be debated, it's certain that the old ways no longer work, and we are quickly running out of time to adopt viable options to mounting global crisis.
I think we're in a global crisis.
But it's kind of a cool concept, right? That only 1% of humanity is needed to create good vibrations. And that same website talks about how evolution does not have to be fast or uncomfortable. Uh-huh. Like this 1% of humans can trigger world peace, and then it can be a slow, gradual process after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to share a quote by Muji. So Muji said, "Truth is what we are. It is our essential nature and being. It is the pure self, the limitless one, the ultimate reality. It is awareness itself. But we have become unaware of the magnificence of our true nature on account of our upbringing, conditioning, and education, which paint a very different picture of who we are and all of which we believe. So the last thing I want to say about collective consciousness is this concept of how we are born pretty pure. Yeah. And then we have a lot of conditioning put upon us when we're very young and impressionable. And so the collective consciousness is partially responsible for that. When people just accept a negative reality to be true, and then because we're so young and we're taught it, we just accept it.
Right? It's almost like there's a writer. Her name is Bell Hooks. She used to always write about how when you're working within a system of conditioning, you're working, you're looking at it from the inside looking out and from the outside looking in, and you know there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. You know that there's something wrong, but you're not sure how to fix it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people just accept it. Like, that's the way it's always been. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And also I think too that there's this almost collective despair.
Thank you for saying that. You just read my mind.
Yeah, girl. I got you. Well, telepathic. Oh. I'm reikiing you right now.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say that when I was growing up, I mean, I was extremely depressed, and there was a lot of childhood trauma and stuff that contributed to that, but I just had this mentality that people were all sad all the time, and if people seemed happy, they were pretending, which is really sad when you think about it.
Right.
And honestly, it's really relevant to this podcast because I found yoga in my late teens, and it was ultimately like the first time that it wasn't the first time I experienced happiness or joy. I definitely experienced that before, obviously, but it was the first time that I experienced God or experienced the universe, and I experienced that feeling of everything being right. Mm-hmm. And I was safe and okay, and I was blissful. Like, I was ultimately blissful. Mm-hmm. And it was real, and it was like the most real thing I had ever felt in my entire life. Mm. And yeah, I kind of realized that this conditioning I had put upon me, not by anyone in particular, not by my parents or anything. My parents did a great job of raising me.
Sure.
But it was just this collective consciousness of accepting unhappiness and accepting the situation that we're in, and accepting that the world is not a safe place for children, that we rape our planet and murder our animals. I mean, sorry, I'm getting super dark here, but
girl, that's why it's called dark.
So that's the collective consciousness, and it's important to understand the collective consciousness because we need to start altering the collective consciousness more so into the realm of Reiki and in the realm of magic. So like I said, it's a reality that's around us all the time, and we just have to tap into it. And this is another reason why we're not supposed to share the Reiki symbols with people. Mm-hmm. Because the collective consciousness, the only people that have the Reiki symbols use them with love, and they treat them as something sacred, and they have ultimate respect for them. Mm-hmm. And we only use them when we're doing Reiki. And the belief is that if we start to share these symbols, they're going to be misread and misused. Kind of like, you know, the swastika, which was originally a symbol of peace.
Yeah, it was a symbol by the Native Americans to stand for, like, the four winds and the four directions. And it was culturally appropriated to a completely negative use. So a lot of people look at the swastika sign and they don't realize that actually that was a sign that came from the Native Americans originally. And I can't say what tribe, so don't call me on any of that, but I do know that it was taken from the Native Americans. God damn it, you are literally just paving.
There you go. You're welcome.
The road for me.
So you're so welcome. So that's why we only share the symbols with people who are Reiki attuned, Reiki taught, is because we want to hold respect for the symbols, and it's the fact that we use the symbols with the energy work every time that keeps them potent. It's the collective consciousness. It's the belief of the power of the symbols that ultimately makes them powerful.
Right?
Yeah. And so if people were to just start throwing them around, or if people were to see that and in their mind believe that's not real or that doesn't do anything, they're creating this whole new collective consciousness against it. And the symbol will literally lose its power. Since Reiki isn't a tangible thing, it's something that is fueled by collective consciousness.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's such a crazy thing.
I can tell you, I just want to insert in, I have received Reiki from Megan and am now also Reiki level 1 and 2 attuned. And I can say that beyond a shadow of a doubt, I've always been one to feel energy anyway. It's one of the reasons that led me to massage therapy. But the amount of peace and calm mm-hmm. that is felt during a Reiki session, more than anything else, I have found that even if you have a hard time struggling with this idea of like energy being transferred and moving around the world and having this collective consciousness, the sheer fact of allowing your nervous system and your entire body to connect with the energetic field that powers at even the nanocellular level.
Yeah.
It's profound. Beautiful.
The truth is, it's bigger than us.
Right.
That's why it's so powerful.
We are part of it, actually. We are walking and moving within it.
Yeah. And it essentially comes from the concept that everything is one and everything is connected and everything is God or everything is goddess. So everything comes from that vibration. Mm-hmm. And so we're just filtering and channeling that energy.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, when I receive Reiki, I just pass the fuck out every time. And it's like immediately, like once they touch my head or draw the symbols on me, I'm gone and I'm in a different world. And people receive it differently. Mm-hmm. It's that powerful though. Like I can't receive it and not travel to a magical dimension every single time. I just mm-hmm. knock out right away. And yeah, a lot of people will describe it that way. They just go into the deepest like meditation they've ever gone into. It's so relaxing mm-hmm. and... So Reiki comes from a mixture of Qigong, Shintoism, and Buddhism. Qigong long ago believed in the universe and everything consisting of energy, which is now becoming scientifically proven. Reiki was not invented. It has always been. It was rediscovered by Dr. Usui in the end of the 19th century, which is when it received its name. However, Reiki was practiced long, long, long before that, possibly 5,000 years ago or longer. There hasn't been written record of this as it was passed down without being recorded. Reiki is not a religion. It has nothing to prove or control. So having written recording of it was never really that important. Dr. Usui was on a 21-day retreat on Mount Kuruma to fast and meditate when he discovered Reiki. He felt the energy atop his head, then pour into his body. Reiki finds you when it is time. If you're questioning whether you are ready to do Reiki or whether you can even do Reiki, just know that you don't seek Reiki, it seeks you. Reiki is bigger than us. If you are interested in Reiki, if you feel like you want to experience or to learn it, then Reiki has already found you and it is meant to be. So Tai Chi and Qigong practice moving energy. We move Reiki from a divine energy into our hearts and out of our hands. This means that the energy that we move is universal. It is not giving of our own energy to others. We are merely vessels transporting healing light. When we give or deliver Reiki, we also receive Reiki from divine. So each treatment is essentially treating yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true to be told even with Yoga Nidra, right? It's just mm-hmm. one of those things when you're dealing with the energetic field of healing, mm-hmm. you can't not reap some of the benefits.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Every time I teach Yoga Nidra, I feel like I did it. And I like how you said it earlier when you were talking about how you've received Reiki from me and that you're attuned in Reiki. And I like it. See, and this is a common thing with people who do learn Reiki. You didn't say, I taught you Reiki, right?
What did I say?
Because you just said that you were attuned in Reiki.
Oh, cool.
And that's the thing, though, is that because, like, I didn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, the energy.
Yeah, you just showed me the door.
Exactly, yeah.
I walked on through it.
The energy teaches you. Yes. You walked on through. Yeah, and so it's the same thing, like, with my teacher and his teacher. You know, it's, you know, we're just respecting the energy. It's not like my teacher has this amazing...
Right, that Reiki guru complex
teacher.
Again,
yeah,
right?
We don't do the guru complex with it. Like, yeah. It's all about the Reiki.
Yep.
I want to go a little bit over the chakras. I'm not going to get in detail about all the chakras. I'll do that, like, on some other episode. But I just want to give, like, a brief overview. So what Reiki does is it balances and clears the chakras. So we all have an aura that extends like 2 to 3 feet radius away from our bodies. It surrounds us. And this is the chakras. So this is pulsating discs of focused energy, spirals narrowing as they reach the physical body and hook into the spine. The chakras hold information about past pain and trauma. Areas of life are tied to the chakras. For example, you can possibly heal an addiction by treating the throat chakra with Reiki, or heal a heart condition by treating the heart chakra with Reiki. There is nothing to matter when you look at it on a subatomic level. 99.9% of an atom is space. Everything is connected via magnetic energy and electrical energy. Many researchers now agree that the human energetic field provides an energy matrix upon which physical cells grow. Energy exists before physical. Disturbances in the auric field eventually manifest as disease in the physical body. Thus, healing the chakras is resisting illness. So when we talk about energy work and people are like, energy work and all that, frou-frou, hoo-ha, or whatever people call it.
Frou-frou, hoo-ha. All that cocky wobble.
Yeah, there we go. All that cocky doodle do.
Oh, okay. Go with it.
I mean, when you would get down to a scientific level, it is actually proven that everything is energy. And so
everything.
With that argument, like, Reiki is the most real thing that there is. And when you experience Reiki, at least when I experience Reiki, it is the most honest, true thing I've ever experienced. It's pure fucking magic. I'm serious.
Yeah.
So the concept of the chakras, like yoga, originated in the Hindu culture, specifically from the Upanishads, part of the sacred Hindu text called the Vedas. Veda means knowledge. The main message of the Upanishads is that enlightenment can be achieved by meditating with the awareness that your soul is at one with all creation. The soul is identified as what is real and what is immortal. The Upanishads also include reincarnation and karma. So Tibetan Buddhism then explored the chakras as tantric Shakta theory. Shaktism describes the 7 major chakras as we recognize today. In Shakta theory, the chakras are viewed as pure consciousness and are focal points for meditation. The tantric texts also refer to the nadis, or the energy channels of vital life force, or prana, which thread throughout the body and link the chakras. So the 7 major chakras are strung along the primary nadi, which is Sushumna, like pearls or jewels. There are also 2 secondary nadis on either side of the Sushumna. Ida on the left, containing cooling feminine lunar life force or vitality, and Pingala on the right, containing warming masculine solar vitality. The aim is to direct the energy of each secondary nadi into the central nadi, where it then ascends through each chakra in turn. When kundalini energy reaches the highest chakra, the crown chakra, the yogi achieves a state of oneness with God or the universe, the cosmos, their higher power, etc. So it's kind of cool, this image that you see of, like, if you can picture like a meditating yogi. And then you have the 7 chakras lit up. So you have 1 at the root, like right at the very bottom of the spine. You have 1 at the sacral, like right underneath the belly button. 1 at the solar plexus. 1 at the heart, the throat, the center of the forehead, and then above the head. So there's these 7 pearls or jewels. Mm-hmm. And then you have the nadis, which are the energy channels. And what they do is they kind of like squiggle back and forth through each one. So it'll mm-hmm. start at the crown, and then it'll loop around into the third eye, and then it'll loop through the throat.
Almost like that double helix, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and then the mm-hmm. other side mirrors it. And so it's perfectly symmetrical. So if you're interested in receiving Reiki and you've never done it before, just know that it's a very relaxing practice. You will lay on a table fully clothed if you'd like. You can get under the blankets or not. Sometimes my clients take their clothes off and get under the blankets, kind of like we're going to do a massage, because some people just prefer to receive
sure.
that way. It's completely up to you. So just know, if you're ever uncomfortable with stuff like that, like, Reiki isn't like a massage. You don't have to take your clothes off. And the practitioner doesn't even have to touch you. So this can be a very therapeutic practice for someone who's recovering from trauma mm-hmm. and someone who doesn't want to be touched but needs to be healed. And I usually perform Reiki by laying my hands directly on the body. However, I can absolutely hover since the aura, like I said before, surrounds like a 2 to 3 foot radius egg shape around your entire body. We can put our hands and work with the aura without touching the body at all. I think it's extremely relaxing to have the hands laid on me. It feels very soothing, but that's personal me.
I would agree with that. That's how I feel.
Yeah. And then, but we're massage therapists, so we're very touch
oriented. I'm all touch me.
Touch, physical touch is my love language. If you are interested in receiving Reiki, definitely check out my website, happyhealingdenver.com. Mm-hmm. And I would love to set you up with your first Reiki session. You're just going to experience, hopefully, balancing of the chakras, removing of any energetic blockages, and deep inner peace and truth. And so sometimes this can look like the truth can maybe be a little jarring. And so occasionally we'll have experiences where maybe you cry or you have an upsetting experience briefly. You might feel a little blip of discomfort and then it goes away. And then you feel peaceful again and you don't even really know what it was. Maybe we don't even have to define it. And most of the time when you receive a Reiki session, you'll just feel very peaceful and calm and relaxed afterwards. If you are processing a lot, occasionally it'll bring to the surface something that you're processing and then we'll be able to heal it. That is Reiki.
I love it. I think that you all should check out Megan's website, happyhealingdenver.com. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else? Oh, there was something I wanted to share with you about what I learned, especially in, so I learned in massage school, and this was something that really resonated with me, which made me tenfold believe and understand, especially because I've already felt energy all the time growing up, but it made me connect the science with the esoteric of there's these energy centers. Well, what's really great that I learned in the lymphatic drainage program at the massage school both Megan and I went to. Here's a funny story, guys. Megan and I went to the same massage school, but like, I don't even know.
That's another 5 years apart. We have so many parallels where our paths have crossed like literally 10 times. Like the universe kept trying to pull us together over and over again. Like, you guys, meet. Hurry up. Just come together already.
Start a podcast.
Same spa, same massage school, same yoga teacher training program. Yep. Like literally we were just pulled together over and over and over again. Same friend group.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
But one of the neat things that I learned in the lymph drainage program was that the lymph system has, along with the nervous system and the cardiovascular system, has nerve ganglia or ganglii, whatever. But I don't know. I almost said like whoever knows, don't correct me. No, but there's nerve ganglia that actually expresses and shows that there was some definition and affinity to Reiki and energy work. So for example, around the heart, ton of nerve ganglia. Around the solar plexus, which is what you would call your digestive fire, tons of nerve ganglia, including the thoracic duct. There's so much around the chakras as it resembles the nerve and cardiovascular, like venous, like plexi.
So cool.
It's so interesting. And that's really what made me go, okay, there's something to this. You know, looking at these energetic epicenters in each parts of our bodies. And that's what the chakras are.
Yeah. And thank you, Holly, for bringing my esoteric topic scientific once again. It's all about the balance. And I mean, they do exist very beautifully together. And I also just remembered a dream I had about you last night.
Oh, my God. Tell me.
I'd like to share.
Can I leave it in the podcast?
Sure.
Okay, sweet.
So I had this dream that like you – so our friend Gabby – she is a stand-up comedian. We all drove to California together one time. But she got COVID my dream. And she was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And you went to see her. And you were telling me this. And I was so mad at you in the dream. I was like, oh, we've been doing we've been taking all of these precautions to keep everyone safe, and you're just going to go expose yourself to someone, and I'm supposed to come over tomorrow. And I was so mad at you that I woke up mad at you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I was like, mad at me. I was like, no, I can't see you, and we can't record the podcast and all this stuff. And yeah, I was like, do you ever have that where you have a dream and it's so real that you wake up and you're mad at someone that did absolutely nothing to you?
Oh, absolutely. Like when your partner cheats on you in your dream and they wake up and they are in the fucking doghouse.
And you're like punching them in the back of the head. And they're like, what did I do?
Yeah, basically. Hold on, I need to cough. While you were having dreams about me, apparently my humidifier and air purifier were having a turf war. It was a lot funnier in the moment. I really wish I'd been recording.
Oh. All right, Holly, what are you talking about today?
Thank you for asking, Megan. You have been dropping little seeds and a little like crumb trail for my topic. As I mentioned earlier, I've mentioned throughout all of the podcasts, I just finished my semester of a political science course. It was American government. The cool thing is that my professor brought all the things that have been happening in our government right now, all the shit with COVID, every aspect of it, into our learning.
That is so cool that you got to have that during this whole thing.
It really helped, especially when it came down to me advocating for myself with this spa job. Mm-hmm. They were being quite a bit unreasonable.
Yeah, stick up for yourself. Can I drop a quick note, yes, by the way, please, about that? So yes, our rights are protected right now, and I think it's under the CARES Act. And so I don't know if that's the same thing, so sorry if I'm wrong.
No, you're fine.
But and so if you are uncomfortable returning to work and you have an employer telling you that you have to or you'll get fired, that actually isn't true. And yeah, you can legally not go back to work if you're not ready to, or if you have someone in the house that's immunocompromised, or you see someone in the elderly population regularly and you don't want to risk infecting them, you can not go back to work. And there's a lot of businesses I've heard, like in Texas and stuff, that are telling their employees that you're not allowed to wear a face mask to work and stuff like that. And I just want everyone to know that just because your employer tells you that you have to return to work or that you're not allowed to wear a face mask, that you actually have rights and yes, that you don't have to believe them with any of that. So know your rights and stick up for yourself and do what you feel is right.
Absolutely. What's interesting around that is this class forced me to look up everything from the executive orders that have been placed and put and enforced by our governor here in Colorado, along with the CARES Act, which is a federal policy, and then the pandemic unemployment assistance, which is separate from unemployment benefits. So I'm bringing forth the concept and the topic of power and privilege and the institutions built around them. Awesome. So let me grab my notes really quick.
I'm excited to learn about this.
So power and privilege shape the relationships that people have with each other, as well as within the established institutions that we have in place. I wanted to read a little quote from the paper that I wrote, and I will be referencing my paper, and then I'm going to go ahead and give the resources. So Nelson Mandela once said, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love." Mm. "For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite."
Boom, sucker.
Yeah, boom, shakalakalabak, boom. What did I just say? Boom, shakalakalaka, boom.
We are such losers.
Totally. Well, that's why I edit, because then we just sound great.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring forth, I guess, what I would call a little political science lesson. One, because I had to write this fucking paper. And two, because while this won't release for a few weeks, it's the first week of May. What date is it? May 8th?
It's the 8th.
So it's May 8th. And we're just finding now that yet another black person has been killed. Mm-hmm. His name was Ahmaud Arbery.
This happened months ago, right?
This happened in February. And I want to say that thankfully the social pressure with the video that was released affected the now current situation after now months of the two men, and they were white men, that shot Ahmaud. Oh my God, I hope I don't say his name wrong. Ahmaud. I think it's Ahmaud. 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 God, Jesus Christ.
Do you want to do it again?
I sure do.
And it was
do.
Two white supremacists. Right? Yes. Not just white men.
Well, yeah. And the thing that was really sad was there was a father and son. Ugh. And the father had recently retired from being in law enforcement. Mm. So that just goes to show you. And this was in southern Georgia in the county of Glenn. And it's just a really sad story.
And
Ahmaud
was out for a jog.
He was literally out for a jog.
He wasn't like doing anything wrong.
No. And the video is really sad. I did watch it because I am a believer in making sure that you access the truth and also stand up for what is right. So this was really important to me, and I just so happened to have to be writing a paper on power and privilege. The obvious places in which privilege shows up is with race. I mean, we've seen that systematically, but it also includes some other aspects, which I'm going to get to here in a moment. But first, per the usual, I want to give what sources I have. I have a few more this time. I'll make sure that I put them in the episode notes. The first one is an article by Frances Kendall, PhD. It's called Understanding White Privilege. A article from Peggy McIntosh titled White Privilege Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. Another one from a college website titled Power and Privilege Definitions. The book Deculturalization and the Struggle for Equality, A Brief History of the Education of Dominated Cultures in the United States. And lastly, from the University of Sunset Coast in Australia, Race, Power, and Privilege. So to begin, power and privilege go hand in hand. You may be born with privilege based solely on the color of your skin because of the way that the historical constructs have been made in our societies. But also you might be born with both. And they are not sui generis, or they can't not be sui generis, which means basically like they can't show up without each other. So a lot of people who might not recognize that they have privilege because they fall into maybe a lower socioeconomic status, which I'm going to get to. I'll sound a lot more educated on it in a minute, I promise.
You sound smart.
Thank you. Therefore, privilege is granted to people who have membership in one or more of these social identity groups. White people, able-bodied people. So that's for all you yogis out there who are landing them handstands. I hope you know how able-bodied you are.
Does that mean just not disabled?
Yeah, that means anybody, you know, and I think that's actually what, this total sidebar, what deters people from going to yoga studios, because they see this image of having to be able-bodied. Actually, I mentioned earlier when we weren't recording, so I'll just kind of get to it real briefly, is I mentioned earlier that a lot of times, you know, there isn't any kind of yoga classes that are offered out there that offer bilingual classes or offer adaptive yoga or offer yoga for senior citizens. It's just a lot more rare. You have to really look and find in the community where those resources and classes are. Another part of privilege is heterosexuals, people who are and identify as cisgendered or straight. Males, duh. Christians, duh. Middle or owning class people. So you would have to say by owning, they means that they have assets. They have property. Mm. They have cars that they own. They have real estate that they own.
They're born into money.
Yeah, they're born. Yeah. That's privilege, right? Mm-hmm. Middle-aged people. I don't think people realize that. When you fall into the bracket of between like 20 and say 50 years old.
20 is middle-aged.
Well, no, not necessarily. I don't think that we would call adolescent, so young adult.
Okay, yeah.
But I think young adult really does count as middle age. I mean, I think because of our life expectancy getting so much longer that 20-year-olds might not really count. But I think that from between the ages of like 20 to 50, 20 to 60, you would be considered a middle-aged, able-bodied person with privilege because you're not elderly and you're not so young that you are dependent on, sure, say, like your parents.
Sure, that makes sense.
Lastly, English-speaking people. Language and the use of language and the official languages that countries try to implement is a huge deal. So here in the United States, there's been a lot of legislation and policy about determining English as the official language. There are still bills and policies being introduced into Congress constantly by certain interest groups that want to identify English as the official language, and therefore it allows them to discriminate. It's unfortunate.
So I fit into three of those.
Yeah, I fit in. I mean, I'm multi. I think the thing that's interesting, too, is, you know, it says white people, but I identify as multi-ethnic and multiracial because I fall into, you know, a Caucasian or white as far as some of my ancestry goes. But then there's also I have Latino and Hispanic ancestry. Mm. So it's interesting because what that comes down to then is by white people, I'd say anybody who is pretty light-skinned. Because there are people who pass in other, you know, black and brown communities where if you're lighter-skinned, that's actually viewed as a privilege. Mm-hmm. Across the board.
So I'm fairly privileged.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
yeah, because I'm white and able-bodied.
Mm-hmm.
And
you'd be surprised.
English speaking.
Yeah. Well, and I would say too, even though maybe you don't own any property, you own a car. Mm-hmm. That's considered more as privilege than to another person with a lower socioeconomic status. And even though we wouldn't say that we are financially privileged, mm-hmm, comparatively, we have a lot of financial privilege. Mm-hmm. So privilege is characteristically invisible to the people who have it. Most people who fall into a dominant group often believe that they have earned these privileges, which is a complete and total fallacy because much of our privilege was not earned by us. It was actually ascribed to us because of our nation's history.
Yikes.
I know, it's kind of shitty. Sorry, guys. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's how it is.
I mean, that's why we pay Native Americans a tax, right?
Yeah.
Because we just shadow their lives. Yeah. And now we're like, oh, sorry for being assholes. Here's some money. It's like, why don't we pay that to African American people, too?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that I think it's just there's so many different racial groups that have been absolutely affected by this idea that white privilege and white power, those are the institutions that founded this country. And so to think that it doesn't exist anymore or that suddenly that equality is something that's found nationwide is just a complete and utter illusion. Mm-hmm. Our biggest failure as a global society, especially in groups that fit more of those norms and mores, is that we ignore the power and privilege and the institutions designed around that, because what they do is they pit us against each other. A lot of people will still say statements like, racism doesn't exist, or things are equal now.
Wow.
Or even, all lives matter. Mm. And I would say, yeah, this is true. All lives do matter, but you're kind of missing the whole fucking point of Black Lives Matter, yeah, or even Chicano Lives Matter, mm-hmm, or Asian Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to also then include in, like you said, Native American groups and indigenous groups of people. One of the things that we have to look at is, are the institutions that are in place doing a good job representing the communities that need it the most? And my answer, the long and the short of it, would be absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I have realized that my privilege is not mine. It was taken at the expense of someone else. Mm. Toxic colonialism, toxic masculinity, toxic male privilege is across the board in every culture. I mean, I've looked up and seen and experienced machismo, which is just as much a toxic aspect of Latino culture as white privilege and white power is in the white communities. So machismo? It's just, yeah, machismo is like, it's like the patriarchy, you know, it's like the, I always say like machismo, you know, it's this term of like men are better, women are subservient, and it is, it's this behavior, it is a behavior. I mean, even the entire Spanish language has an element of machismo to it because it has been gendered. Mm-hmm. There are female nouns, there's masculine nouns. So it's interesting to see that even in the language that we have across the board in different cultures, there is this idea of even the privilege of that males are better and
women. I can't think of any culture that doesn't think that men are better than women.
No, I mean, a lot of the cultures, and I would have to do a little bit more research, but there isn't many cultures in which the feminine or the goddess.
Yeah.
I would say in maybe Hindu culture, but that's because they have, they're polytheism.
No, women are, are very much shunned.
Well, they have goddesses, but that's about it, right? They have goddesses in Hinduism. But they don't
treat women like goddesses. Right. Far from it.
Exactly. So it's across the board. You know, privilege is not just about race. But I will say, in lieu of Ahmaud being killed and the number of black people, the number of people of color just in general that continue to be systematically discriminated against is just something why I wanted to bring this to the table.
Yeah. This is a good topic. I want to hear more about it, and I'm also going to get heated.
Yeah, you probably will.
You're going to start hearing me banging on the table.
Well, so one thing that is really interesting that I want people to consider, and my political science teacher brought this to my attention, and she was like, our university or our college would totally fire me for saying this to you, so this is off the record, which is why I'm not going to say where I took this class. Good. Or what her name is. I'm trying to protect her job. But she said, we need to look at where institutions are giving the message that color and education and diversity counts. They're going to find candidates that offer up that diversity, right? So say like at community colleges and universities, they're going to want to hire in all around the board, all around the campus, they're going to want to hire people of color. What she's getting at is we have to remember that if a person of color is in a position to apply for a job, has a college education, and also has the resources available to accomplish all these things and apply for these jobs, go to college, do those things, those people of color also had privilege too. And so oftentimes what happens is we have to ask ourselves is, are these institutions doing a good job representing the communities that need it most? It is rare that you will find somebody who says, I grew up in the projects and then I went to college and then I got my master's and then I got my doctorate. Those are going to be rarities. Those are the anomalies. Mm-hmm. And so the people who are finding themselves, who are people of color, finding themselves in jobs, maybe at higher education institution, they also had privilege too. Mm-hmm. They probably grew up with a little bit of money. Maybe they grew up with educated parents. Because the thing that remains to be true with privilege and power is that you have to have available resources and you have to have access to resources. Many of our kids growing up in the projects, unless they stand out in some way, form, or another, they are not going to be given the resources that they need to even successfully complete high school.
I'm thinking of like that program that they have where you can get a scholarship for being the first person in your family to ever go to college, but even what you're saying with that is that you would have to have a computer and access to the internet, and you would have to have knowledge of that even existing as a program to apply for that, which in itself is privilege.
In and of itself, it's absolutely privilege. Huh.
So, learning.
It's interesting, you know? It's so interesting. So we have to remember that those who are instilling what they think is the image of diversity is still, if we're thinking of higher education or if we're even thinking of the board of, say, Denver Public Schools, it's going to be a faculty of usually white men. So we have to know that looking at race and gender, we find that white men have greater access to power and resources than most people, which also includes white women. That doesn't go to say that white women are completely oppressed as the way they used to be, but we still have subjugation, we still have oppression within the system of power and privilege. So oftentimes, like I mentioned before, our privilege is invisible to us, especially if you do not consider yourself to be born into power. Often, it's not our intent, but we have had unearned benefits that have been written into even things like the Constitution. For example, the writing of the U.S. Constitution, which in 10 articles very intentionally confirmed the holding of Black people as slaves as property. We have the belief from a lot of white people that our destiny was to own the land on which we all currently live, even though that required forcibly removing the native people who have lived here for centuries.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Destiny.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the manifest destiny, which is really fucked up. And here's the interesting thing, you know, what people don't realize is the Black rights movement, civil rights movement, paralleled the Chicano movement. It paralleled the Asian American movement. It's paralleled in many respects across all racial backgrounds because everything about our Constitution and everything about the way that our government and the way that this nation was founded has been in the institutions of power and privilege based on that faculty of white men, right? And it's still in place. That's the thing that people need to understand. And that's why I'm talking about this, because people are still killing people based on the color of their skin.
Exactly.
It's horrible.
And how can you say that racism doesn't exist anymore?
You would be surprised. You would be surprised, but when you think about it.
That jogger that got murdered for absolutely no reason, that wasn't racism. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Because the father was part of former law enforcement, he tried to pull that like citizen's arrest. I'm like, a citizen's arrest doesn't include you. Yeah, it doesn't include you shooting somebody at point blank range. Ugh. That's fucked up. I hope that those men receive the adequate consequences. It will never bring Ahmaud back, but hopefully this is, again, another opportunity for that power and privilege and the institutions that have been established around that to be challenged.
Yeah.
Down the line, we have to remember that there was a huge breaking apart of families, primarily Black families, during slavery. They would send mothers to one place, fathers to another place, and their children to another place. This was very intentional. And this is even after the Civil War, during the Reconstruction movement. This was supposed to help slaves be freed. And they didn't put anything into place. So a lot of people stayed in slavery because they had no other options. There's also the fact that the primary institutions around education chose to withhold from not only Black people, but also brown and Asian people, to the ability to read so that they could not reproduce any of their culture or function well enough in our literate society to change their status. So much about what we have in place is still a caste system. Wow. It's not a caste system like India, which based on like we have like the untouchables and then you have the Brahmins and then you have the others. We have a systematic system in place that prohibits certain people from becoming literate. I know that as a teacher. I know that as my entire bachelor's is I have a Chicano studies degree. So my entire background, my entire education is around understanding what happened to Mexicanos and all the Latinos who were completely and systematically subjugated and oppressed.
Wow.
And this shit still continues. When I graduated in May 2014, and I went straight into teaching. And as I quickly learned, was there were incredible differences in resources. The first school I worked at, I had one kid who was half white, and he was also Latino. And then I had 16 of my other students were all first language Spanish-speaking kids. Many of their parents had immigrated to the United States. Many of these kids were born here. And then I had 4 Black students. My relationship with the community there was vastly different than a couple of years later. I switched schools and I worked at a very affluent white school that was a magnet school for gifted and talented. I actually taught a 3rd grade gifted and talented classroom. And I have to tell you that the people that the parents were absolutely ridiculous. Moving on, there's also been the removal of American Indian children, or I'll just say Native American children, from their homes, taking them as far as possible from anything they knew and punishing them if they tried to speak in their own languages. This has also occurred when, after the Brown versus Board of Education had to mandate the desegregation of schools, and yet even the desegregation became a way for our institutions to continue to systematically discriminate by taking the kids and busing them 45 minutes away to a school that was supposed to be now considered inclusive and diverse, but they took them away from their community. So it was still just another ploy. We also have to understand that there's been a manipulation of immigration laws so that people of color, particularly Chinese and Mexican, as well as European Jews, were less free to immigrate to the United States than Western or Eastern Europeans. Even in places as far as Australia, we can confirm that if we were to examine the whiteness of things, we would see that privilege means that Anglo-Australian staff and students generally don't have to worry about a significant portion of things, everything from texts and examples within the curriculum that largely reflect and affirm their own cultural background and experiences. They do not have to suffer from an absence of role models, sponsors, or mentors in their, as far as teachers go, as far as people in positions of authority go. And they don't have to fear rejection from their colleagues or classmates if they have different worldviews, customs, or practices. There's many, many more. But I think if anybody is really curious about this, that they can look it up for themselves. So what we can also come to the conclusion to is that we need to understand that privilege, especially white privilege, is used to define the parameters of appropriate conversation and communication, which keeps our culture, manners, and language central by, and this is going to be interesting to people because I think as someone who's lighter skinned myself, even though I identify as Latina and queer and LGBT and all those things, that actually we keep a lot of our culture central in doing so. For example, requesting a quote unquote safe place to talk about race and racism. This is often translated as being safe from hearing the anger and pain of people of color, as well as being able to say racist things without being held accountable for them. We establish the rules for standard English and holding others to our rules. So like even when you're, for example, writing a paper, I have to follow the guidelines of the Modern Languages Association, which would mean English. I mean, even though there's other languages, duh, but the last thing, I mean, there's a couple more other points that I want to make, but just to kind of wrap it up and bring it together is something that I've seen in the yoga community, and this is one of the reasons also why I wanted to bring it up, is that there is the creation of institutions that are run by our culture's rules, but acting as if the rules are universally held, such as what time meetings start, how people address one another, or the appropriate language to use. So there's, in the yoga community, I think there's this attitude of like saving other people. And what comes to mind is there's a book written by Paulo Freire titled Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And he says, and I want to open this up because this is something that I do think happens, especially because we see in our yoga institutions that it's predominantly white people. Paulo Freire says, true generosity consists precisely in fighting to destroy the causes which nourish false charity. False charity constrains the fearful and subdued, the rejects of life, to extend their trembling hands. True generosity lies in striving so that these hands, whether of individuals or entire people, need be extended less and less in supplication so that more and more they become human hands which work and working transform the world. So basically he's saying is just because we have found this magical, wonderful tool of yoga doesn't necessarily mean that we are saving others just because we see that there is a huge racial and ethnic disparity and lack of representation in our yoga communities, right?
Yeah.
Finally, it is imperative that in order for us to adequately face that the foundations of power and privilege and the vast institutions that command that power must be dismantled. We have centuries of colonial oppression that are deeply rooted in our constitution, our politics, and our schools. So it's important to see and understand that the very structure of our institutions continues to foster oppression. This is something that I actually wrote in my paper, which was, oh, I think I wrote it in our interview with Voyage Magazine. Guys, we are going to be in Voyage Magazine. We are filling out the interview questions now, which is really exciting.
Yeah, we're right? Gonna be in a magazine.
Yeah.
Look for our picture. Which is really pretty. We took it today.
We took pictures today.
Well, we also took some really dorky ones. So we'll see what ends up in there, I guess.
Right? Yeah, something probably. So around that, as far as like the yoga community goes, we have to understand that yoga in and of itself is an institution. And as it's designed, it doesn't necessarily include all people of color. It doesn't include all able-bodied people, and it especially doesn't include all people of economic backgrounds.
And it's so expensive as hell.
It is expensive as hell, and the thing
depending
that,
on the studio, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of people that offer donation-based studios. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I recognize that maybe the beginning of changing this is just the realization and the understanding of our own privilege. But beyond that, do you have any actions that we can start to take to make change with
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you for asking that because this is kind of wrapping it up and bringing it together. We have to know and take into consideration and assume that if the people in positions of power wanted to truly shift the systems that are in place, say, for example, education, when we see that they do nothing to truly enforce the conditions that were provided by the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the, say, in education, Elementary and Secondary Act of 1968 that identify those schools that are largely Black and Latino, we have to understand that they have the power to change these systems and in place, but it doesn't benefit them to do so. Sadly, we have to recognize that the institution of men that embody power and privilege that built our nation generationally and politically are still really intact. And so the work is to dismantle the institutions in place, and that's going to take a significant amount of time. I don't know that it's going to happen in our lifetime or our generation, but maybe in the next. So the hope that I have for people and how to become more involved. First, become an ally. Educate yourself. Educate yourself about oppression. If your first reaction is to say, no, that can't possibly be, I would recommend that you branch out of your own conditioning, your own limitations within your belief and value system, and educate yourself.
Look up. Take the test from the beginning of the podcast when Holly was listing all the different kinds of privileges and check off how many of them you actually have.
Yeah, exactly.
I was shocked. I was like, oh, I am privileged as fuck.
We are. We have a lot of privilege. And we have a social responsibility to use that privilege for good. Learn from and listen to people who are targets of oppression. I think it kind of goes back to that statement of saying, like, this is a safe place. So many people will express that until you have a person of color who's angry, who's carrying generations of familial and racial trauma with them, and they show up and they're fucking pissed. Yeah, they're pissed. Learn to hold that space. If you really want to be an ally, you need to learn to hold that space. That good vibes only shit is fucking bullshit, you guys. I'm just going to call you out on it. next. Yeah. I'm such a shithead today.
I love you.
We need to examine and challenge our own prejudices, stereotypes, and assumptions. We also need to work through feelings of guilt, shame, and defensiveness to understand what is beneath them and what needs to be healed. So many of us understand that what happened in the United States and global history around slavery and the oppression of groups is horrible, but we have to reckon with the guilt and the shame that comes up with us for understanding that our ancestors, to a greater extent, subjugated other people. And so we have a social responsibility to shift that. Next, we need to learn and practice the skills of challenging oppressive remarks, behaviors, policies, and institutional structures. That means if you hear somebody being a racist fuckface, I know, I'm on one today, then you find a way to diplomatically call them out on it. That's the thing I learned is, like, you can't just be like, oh, you're a fuckface. I have been seeing this. I have to tell you, I have been seeing on Facebook, sometimes I just read, if I see that there's like 57 comments on someone's post, sometimes I'll click on the comments just to see. And I see such absolute assholeness coming from people who would call themselves yogis, who would call themselves enlightened, who would call themselves woke.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I saw somebody who we actually know, and I'm not going to say their name, but they put some posts on their own social media that then when somebody challenged them on that, they got so snarky and such an attitude because another person had an opposing view. And that's the thing that I'm learning is that if there's one thing that we can do as far as ego work goes, it's to learn to be able to offer ourselves up for open discussion. And I have been saying lately to a lot of people, they want to keep us divided. If they keep us divided, we're easier to control.
Yeah.
So if you continue to hate on another person because of their ideologies, their values, and the beliefs, then
you're giving in. You're letting them win. Yeah. You hear that, yogis? Stop being a butthole.
Yes. Lastly, act collaboratively with members of the what they call the target group. The target group would be the marginalized groups, the groups that have been systematically oppressed, and help to dismantle oppression. One way that we do that is by getting involved in our state and national government. Not only is that socially responsible, but it, in a sense, is taking some of our power and privilege back. Many people think that voting is a right. It's not. Nowhere in the Constitution does it state that we are allowed to vote or that we have the right to vote. It has been bestowed upon us as a privilege, and so many people do not vote. And what's even more interesting is when you think about it nationally, many of the federal things that trickle down, the federal policies that trickle down, don't have as much an impact on us as local government. local government, everything from our state taxes to the funding of where our taxes go to different policies that are put in place. So it's important that we begin to see that if we continue to give up our privilege to vote and be involved in our political process, we are literally signing our civil liberties over to the people who are voting.
Yeah, and you're just accepting that you're living in someone else's reality, just like I was talking about before.
Exactly, that's why it goes hand in hand.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing that's interesting around that I've been saying to people, and it kind of helps people go, oh, maybe I should get involved, is so during the presidential election, about 45 to 55% of people show up and are registered voters and actually vote.
That's it?
Yes. So that means 45 to 55% of the population is making 100% of the decisions around policy, laws, and our entire governance.
Yikes.
Okay, it gets even worse. In the midterm elections, which is your local government, it's your state council, your governor, your mayor, your senators, all that, those are in the years that there isn't a presidential election. What I found to be the statistic was actually very alarming. It's anywhere between 30 and 40%. So that means at the state level, 30 to 40% of your state population is making 100% of the decision making for the policies, laws, and statutes.
Wow.
That are coming across your state. So if you're angry at anyone, honestly, hate to sound like an asshole, but you should only be angry at yourself. If you're not showing up and you're not participating in these processes, then you really only have yourself to blame. If you're not showing up to vote for your midterm election, you're not participating in who you want to be governor, senator, et cetera, then whoever did vote, those are going to be the voices that are heard.
Go out and vote, y'all.
Go out and vote, y'all. Become an ally and learn to sit in the fire of it. You know, we have been deprived the skills of critical thinking in our society. We have been given such a rudimentary view of our heritage, and our ignorance is not being held against us. And I really think it's time for us to start holding ourselves accountable. And that's why I keep saying socially responsible. You know, we need to end the simplistic sentiments like America, love it or leave it, because we've only been taught fragments of information. For example, we've been told that George Washington couldn't tell a lie, but we also aren't told that he was a slave owner. Many of the men who wrote the Constitution were slave owners. And yes, that is why they developed things such as the 3/5 clause, which basically during that time when they were trying to determine how worthy the vote was or how they were going to count slaves when it came to the census. And they determined that for every 5 slaves, they would count 3 of them as their population.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's insane.
Sorry, that's apparently all I can say.
Yikes.
Yeah, I think I've said that like 10 times now, but
jeepers.
I'm just appalled. This is a good topic, Holly.
Thank you. Well, and I brought it up because, you know, I see a lot of people annihilating each other online. And really, it's educate yourself first and really learn to step into, if you really want the collective to shift as a yogi, as somebody who believes themselves to be woke or whatever you want to call yourself, you have to create enough space for racism and the acknowledgement that it still exists. For it to be there, you need to understand that privilege and power and the institutions that run it are still there. Let's dismantle the institution. Become an ally. Learn to vote. Become part of your political process. Contact your senators. Contact your congressmen, congresswomen. Read.
Vote every single time.
Yes.
And fight the power.
Fight the fucking powers that be, because that's not going to be dismantled very easily.
Together we can, not if we're fighting against each other.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Also, check out our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/yogainthedark.
Is this what we're doing for the end? Is singing?
I think so. And okay. Everyone has now stopped listening.
We lost all of our listeners.
Sorry, guys. No. We'll talk now.
Thank you so much. This was episode 7. Where we explore energy and power.
Power.
Please join us next week for episode 8, which is our listeners episode.
Ooh, which we're actually going to record right now.
Right now. It's going to be great.
So we'll be right back in 7 days, but actually it's going to be 5 minutes for us.
Okay, take care. Please find us on all listening platforms. Find us on our Patreon. And write in your stories, topics, ideas at yogainthedark@gmail.com. And keep an eye out for our interview in Voyage Denver magazine.
Go Voyage.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye.